So hello, good morning, welcome to the McGill Summit on Superior Education in Quebec, organized by the Association of Postgraduate Students and the Association of McGill Students with External Affairs Attaché from McGill University. We would like today to examine the important issues related to the future of superior education and learning here in Quebec. Given the past events, having a thought process and exploration of these events is beneficial to Quebec society and merits and warrants special attention. We will hear from different points of view on the question, and we think that the debate on the underfunding and student contribution to universities reflect our different perceptions of the education system. I would like to invite each individual to ask questions on what is for them the role of the university, how does the education system serve society, what are the links between education and economics. Understanding our differences of perception should help us to advance the debate and eventually will allow us to develop an analysis framework adapted to the social conditions and the society we live in. The idea is to give 5 minutes every day to every speaker to speak about different subjects, and the moderator will ask questions for 20 minutes, and then the public will be able to speak for the last 20 minutes. Alors, en anglais, on espère que ça va être une discussion très intéressante.
About the future of education in Quebec society, and we're hoping that this will be an opportunity for us to reflect on some of the underlying assumptions that people make about education, and to get a better understanding of what those assumptions are and how they reflect different points of view regarding the actual issues. And it's going to open up with 5 minutes for each speaker to give his or her point of view on the debate. Then we're going to have a moderator with 20 minutes of questions, which the presenters have been told about in advance. And finally, 20 minutes for members of the audience to pose questions. Alors, merci pour votre attention et bon débat.
Thank you for your attention and have a wonderful debate. And I would like Maya Isabel to present the first round table. The first discussion will be on the underfunding of universities. The underfunding of universities, myth or reality, is the title. We will have for this debate Mr. Daniel Ziza, President and CEO of the Conference of Directors and Principals of Universities of Quebec, and Martin Desjardins, President of the Quebec Federation of Universities. So please welcome them warmly. Okay, so without further ado, we will get right into the crux of the matter. So I will ask a question, and I will allow both of you to answer in turn, and just wait till the other person finishes before answering, please. The first question is a very important one in the debate on funding or underfunding of universities, and the question is the following: how can we measure the quality of the education? And Madame Desjardins, please, you will go first, and also maybe how is this question for you? How important is it when we're talking about funding or underfunding of universities? Well, in fact, I think we must start from the beginning, meaning that our universities are underfunded because the quality is suffers when the funding is not there or not enough. FERC has a different opinion on this, obviously, but we will often say that in terms of education, we are lacking funds to attain objectives that seem sometimes nebulous. I agree with Mr. Zizia. This might be the only thing we agree on. We can always invest more money in our universities and invest more money in education because our needs are quite extensive when we think about what we can do in terms of education. That being said, the world of reality and the needs are not limited and are limited in the resources. So why do we measure the quality of education? Because we just came back from a summit on education where everybody agrees that the universities here are quality universities. The problem is we don't agree on what the definition of quality is. That is the problem. So we can evaluate their quality, but we cannot define what quality is. So the problem is the criteria to agree on what we want to do and what the needs are, not just needs in terms of teaching, but in terms of research, which is really at the foundation of our universities in a way, developing knowledge, transmission of knowledge, and long-term transmission and development of research. And so what are the needs of university and why are we talking about quality assurance? Because they're connected. We can't really fund a university without knowing what we're doing with the money. We cannot fund universities without knowing what the needs are in terms of teaching and in terms of research. And the big problem in the debate last year was the question that I asked on many occasions, how much money do we need to reach the objectives in terms of teaching and research in our universities? No answer. So I hope we will have some elements of an answer, but for the last year I've been asking this question systematically from administrators and rectors, what are the needs and how can we improve quality in universities and what is the definition of this quality, how do we define it? And I will tell you we have not reached a consensus on that in the last debate. So there's a lot of elements that we have to put in place and a lot of elements to structure before we get to the real question is how much money do we need. First, we have to establish what the basis of our needs are and what our needs are and identify what we want to do, and then we can talk about funding, overfunding or underfunding. I want to talk to Mr. Zizia. I'm sorry I didn't give you a chance for your opening statement. So, Mr. Zizia, please make your opening statement on underfunding of universities, and then we will continue with answering the questions. I will do that after. Okay, thank you. I would like to thank and congratulate the organizers of this conference. I think it's a very positive initiative to allow this discussion to happen in a serene climate and in a university setting where this has a particular resonance with regards to the future of Quebec society, the future of students, and the university network. So I will make a brief presentation.
It's largely conditional on healthy universities. The quality of the education they provide, the dynamic research conducted there, and the strength and relevance of the ties they forge with their local communities and with academic institutions worldwide. Our universities must have the capacity to train the highly qualified workforce that Quebec needs in healthcare, education, engineering, arts, sciences, and all the other fields for which a university education is necessary. To achieve this, the universities need, firstly, independent governance, secondly, the appropriate financial means. Among other things, additional resources will make it possible for universities to hire teaching staff, provide better support for students to ensure their success, develop a policy to attract the best students and researchers from around the world, improve student services, establish and maintain world-class research facilities, continue integrating sustainable development strategies and upgrade certain infrastructures. It must be acknowledged that maintaining the quality of our universities in terms of both teaching and research is essential if Quebec is to maintain its position within the global economy and enhance the standard of living of its population. Under current circumstances, with the issue of university underfunding being questioned by various parties, it is pertinent to recall two studies made public by CREPE, one in 2002 and the other in 2010, both of which illustrated the situation very clearly. The methodology for the 2002 study was developed by a work group in which the Minister of Education participated and which was validated by Raymond Chabot Grant Thornton. For the 2010 study, the methodology and the results were confirmed by the Centre Interuniversitaire de Recherche en Analyse des Organisations, CIRANO. The data came from Statistique Canada and the Canadian Association of University Business Officers and may thus be considered valid. University underfunding has been discussed widely in recent decades, and the issues has been acknowledged repeatedly by parliamentary committees in 2004, 2007, and 2011. All political parties that participated in these processes have recognized the problem, as have all student associations on numerous occasions as recently as 2010. All claims that universities are not underfunded are based on the same argument. When you add capital and research budgets to operating budget, Quebec universities receive more money per student than the Canadian average. This is a fact, but the reasoning is faulty and leads to misrepresentation of universities' reality. Here is why. No university may transfer funds from its research budget to its operating budget because almost all research funds belong not to the university, but to the researchers to whom the funds have been granted by outside granting bodies. When a researcher obtains a grant for a project, the money is paid to the university with the provision for which it was granted. The money, therefore, never be used to cover costs related to teaching. Furthermore, this method of analyzing a university's financial situation suggests that it would be acceptable to penalize research in order to benefit teaching. This is not the way to build a strong and prosperous Quebec. The research professors and graduate students whose work is funded by grants would be the first to suffer. As for capital budget, these respond to the significant growth in students' enrollment, which has increased by more than 30% in the last 10 years. In addition, buildings erected decades ago are aging and require renovating and refitting. It is in recognition of this reality that the government has analyzed the need and allocated capital budget to the universities. CREPIC studies on underfunding are rigorous. They are public and easily available at our website. The Higher Education Summit is where a new pact between Quebec society and its university must be forged. If it is to be a true success, it must provide a viable and permanent solution to the problem of university underfunding and improve access to university education. CREPIC intends to work closely with all partners who seek to achieve these objectives.
Merci beaucoup, Monsieur Zizian. Madame Desjardins, est-ce que vous avez aussi une... est-ce qu'on continue? Est-ce que vous
continuez?
Parfait. Alors, peut-être que je vous lancerai la question suivante. Quel rôle, justement, les fonds de recherche, les bourses d'études, comment on doit les considérer dans le financement des universités? Parce que c'est un peu ça, là, le débat aussi sur la question du financement. Il y a eu différentes recherches dont certaines disaient, comme vous les mentionniez, que si on prend en considération l'argent de la recherche, à ce moment-là, on trouve que les étudiants reçoivent plus d'argent au Québec que dans les autres provinces. Mais l'argument est fait par M. Dizan, et on l'a vu ailleurs aussi, que ces fonds-là ne devraient peut-être pas nécessairement compter lorsqu'on parle du financement des universités. Donc, qu'est-ce que vous répondez à ça?
Deux choses. D'abord, lorsqu'on parle de qualité universitaire, on doit comprendre, en fait, la recherche au sein des universités. Et donc, elles ne peuvent pas être exclues lorsqu'on fait un calcul, en fait, du financement des universités. Ça fait aucun sens. C'est comme si on ne calculait pas l'argent, les subventions ou encore les dons qui sont faits au sein de la recherche. Donc, on ne peut pas exclure totalement un pan en disant, d'un autre côté, que ça compte au niveau de la qualité universitaire. C'est comme si on les calcule pour calculer nos besoins, pour calculer nos objectifs, mais on ne va pas aller vérifier l'argent, en fait, dont on a besoin pour aller répondre à ces objectifs-là. Ça ne fait aucun sens. Deuxièmement, il est faux de dire qu'il n'y a aucun transfert qui est fait à partir de ces fonds de subvention de recherche. On le sait, plusieurs universités vont aller chercher certains montants qui sont donnés par rapport aux subventions de recherche ou encore aux bourses pour combler des dépenses administratives au sein des universités pour l'administration de ces recherches-là. Ça peut aller jusqu'à 10 % dans certains cas. Et donc, de dire qu'il n'y a aucun transfert qui est fait, c'est encore une fois faux. Il y a des transferts qui sont faits. C'est évidemment, ce n'est pas l'ensemble de la subvention ou encore de la bourse qui est donnée. Mais effectivement, on va chercher certains éléments au sein, en fait, de ces bourses et ces subventions-là qui sont données autant aux étudiants qu'aux chercheurs pour combler des fonds d'administration. Et donc, l'université qui va utiliser ces fonds-là pour l'administration de la recherche. Et c'est ce que je trouve étrange, en fait, dans ce discours-là, de dire, mais l'argent appartient aux professeurs, soit. Mais à ce moment-là, pourquoi est-ce qu'on va chercher, en fait, certains fonds pour administrer la recherche, puisque, en bout de course, ça reste quand même aux chercheurs à avoir ce montant-là. Autre chose, c'est aussi faux de dire que ça ne sert pas à l'enseignement. Ça sert à l'enseignement. Ça sert à l'enseignement pour les étudiants gradués. Ça sert à l'enseignement pour les étudiants qui sont à la maîtrise ou au doctorat. Et donc, lorsqu'un chercheur reçoit une subvention, il en utilise une partie pour pouvoir enseigner aussi la recherche aux étudiants des cycles supérieurs. Et donc, de dire que ça ne sert pas, c'est faux. Ça sert, en fait. Est-ce qu'il y a un poste, une ligne, un poste budgétaire qui est attribué à ça? J'en doute fort, et c'est probablement la raison pour laquelle on a un débat sémantique, à savoir est-ce qu'il y a un poste budgétaire pour l'enseignement de la recherche aux étudiants des cycles supérieurs. Il reste tout de même que c'est exactement ce qu'on en fait, c'est bourses et subventions. Autre élément, il y a énormément, en fait, de transferts qui sont faits entre les différents fonds. Au niveau des transferts par rapport à la recherche, effectivement, on n'en a pas beaucoup, en fait, de transferts au sein des universités qui sont faits vers les fonds de recherche. Cependant, on a regardé plusieurs éléments, fait plusieurs calculs, et on se rend compte qu'il y a, dans le fonds de fonctionnement, qui sert notamment à la recherche en enseignement, des transferts qui sont faits pour les fonds d'investissement, qui servent pour justement le capital, pour les buildings. Et donc, on le sait qu'il y a des fonds, normalement dédiés à l'enseignement, qui sont transférés pour la maintenance, en fait, de nos immeubles. Et donc, quand on dit qu'on manque d'argent, qu'on ne peut pas utiliser l'argent des fonds de recherche, il faudrait peut-être, à la base, utiliser les fonds de fonctionnement que l'on reçoit pour les objectifs pour lesquels ils ont été dédiés. Donc, il y a énormément d'argent qui est transféré, évidemment, de l'autre côté. Et ça aussi, il va falloir qu'on le regarde de façon plus attentive, mais je sais que tu as une question là-dessus, donc on y revient.
Parfait. Monsieur Dizan, est-ce que vous voulez répondre?
Oui, je vous laisserai certainement, je vais répondre. Je suis à toutes les fois surpris de la méconnaissance du mode de fonctionnement des universités et de la facilité avec laquelle on en parle, comme si c'était une vérité absolue. Et je vais essayer de reprendre point par point.
The element. When we say that the research funds, the funds that are used for administration, there is what is called an indirect cost for research that serve to pay for costs that are covered by institutions for research. But these funds are not taken, put into research funds and then transferred there to pay directly to the university. It's a percentage, especially when we take funding from the federal government. It's a percentage that is paid for the university to cover the indirect cost of research, and it does not it is not part of the research funds that are paid, first of all. Second of all, our researchers in Quebec are very, very proficient and very efficient and productive, and they will get more than their relative share when we calculate the proportion of Quebec citizens. We are 23% of the population, and Quebec researchers get more than 23% of the funds from the federal government for research and from private industry. So we have to be really happy about that. Should that lower the functioning budget of universities? No. Is the research funding useful for students, for teaching? Yes. 60% of funds that come from bursaries go through professors to students for bursaries and for hiring research assistants for grants, and so it's something very useful, and it's not a semantic debate. It's to know if underfunding of universities, it's a reality. And the Minister of Finance, when he produced a document on the situation, has demonstrated this quite clearly. When we look at the whole of funds in Quebec, yes, we spend more per student. When we look at operating costs, what allows us to have professors, to make sure we have quality libraries, laboratories, we are lacking more than $2,000 per student in Quebec, which means $600 million a year, year after year. These are not only the numbers of QIPU, these are the numbers of the Finance Minister of Quebec, which means that students have fewer resources at their disposal by university institutions, because university institutions have less money. And when we talk about transferring funds, the minister, he's the one who dictates what the transfers are possible and how they must be done. Yes, in the budget there are amounts that serve to maintain institutions for maintenance and for infrastructure, and it's in the budgetary framework, and in the grants it's already there. It's included for maintenance and operations, and you are in an establishment in a university, and you know that needs these maintenance and operations budgets. Madame Desjardins, I knew that we would talk about indirect costs of research that are another envelope that are received for research funding, but we're really talking about grants that are received by certain researchers, and we have a lot of elements around that, so we're not talking about the same thing. I agree that researchers in Quebec are very proficient, very productive. They get a lot of grants. I agree, but that is not what we're talking about in terms of transferring of funds. Transferring of funds are not dictated exclusively by the minister, but also are done through universities, and I find it surprising that the students that want autonomy for universities cannot recognize that universities make their own budgetary choices, and we have to transfer between different funds and different in different institutions. Allow me to be surprised by this. There's also, and this is surprising, the Minister of Finance, for having spoken with him over the last year on many occasions, asked the question about funding framework for universities and how it was elaborated in the funding plan for universities. We have looked at different agreements for different universities in Quebec, and when we asked the question, what are the agreements, and can we review these agreements and look at them to understand the needs and objectives of the universities, and said it was not done yet.
Which means that the ministry itself doesn't know yet what are the objectives and the needs of each university, which is quite surprising when you think that we're going to receive $900 million. Which means that last year we were ready to put $300 million without any previous assessment and without the agreements being signed. And that was also the case for the Ministry of Education. when you tell me that you recognize a different element, it means that you suppose that the elements are existing. However, we don't know where the monies will be sent. So we can ask ourselves, have we assessed our needs on the long term in a proper manner? When you say recurrent 600 million, it means that we need those funds for operation. We received $2.2 billion in transfers. Federal and provincial transfer for our operation funds in Quebec. $2.2 billion for the network as a whole. I'd like to know what we've done with that money. It's not only a matter of putting that money in the operation funds. We have received that money specifically for those elements. I think you'd like to answer, Monsieur Vidal, but I still have a question to ask you. First question that I asked Madame Desjardins is, how do you assess the needs of university financially? You mentioned $600 million, and Mrs. Desjardins underlined this figure, and we also know that this figure was only given as for reference, a comparison. So I'd like to hear your opinion on the way we assess the needs of universities. So I'd like to say here that it's not concerning the education fees for the rest of Canada. It's about the amount that is available for universities. When you compare the amount that is available to universities in the rest of Canada compared to the Quebec University for available resources. So what we are considering is the operation grants and the revenues of education fees as compared to Quebec. So it's by comparing the resources that Canadian universities have access to that we can assess this amount of 120 million. We are living in an environment and a system where the professors can go to any other universities in North America, and foreign students, international students also have a great choice, as well as, of course, Quebec students that can travel. So we do need to have the necessary resources. When you need more money, when you mention underfunding, it's not the... It's concerning the operation funds to pay teachers, to have better equipments, state-of-the-art equipments. The Ministry of Finances, when it announced the university funding, had planned the way those amounts had to be used. 50 or 60% were going to the quality of teaching, 25% for research, and so on. So it was planned that there would be no sums given to the universities if in the absence of agreement. So we negotiated, there were negotiations past spring for each of the universities. So I am very unhappy because until 2010, until the government decided to tackle this issue of underfunding, until that moment, the whole of, all the Quebec federations recognized that underfunding. I want to quote just one thing about the 2009 and 2010. The field considers that universities, Quebec universities, are underfunded, and that this underfunding is huge. So this is a consequence of budget cuts, and it has direct impact on the realization of the mission of universities. What was true in 2010 is even truer in 2012. So, Madame Desjardins, I would like to clarify a point. I will give you the mic, but first let me clarify one thing. Concerning the 120 million, it's still a comparative figure. However, how can we concretely assess the needs of Quebec universities? I'm not sure I understand that point. Well, what we submitted in 2010, this public document that you can find on the website, well, we had indicated that that was a priority, a financing and funding priority. The main priority is hiring teachers. When you consider the ratio teachers students, there's a real degradation over the years. In 2004, we had 18.5 students per professor, and now we're 22, almost 22 per professor. And this does have a consequence, especially on for the second and third cycles, where we have smaller groups and we need a better structure. So the main priority was the body of professors, and then it was the framework that we had to provide to our students. Unfortunately, many of the students don't finish their second or third level studies. We need a framework. We need to help them finishing their studies. We also know that in the first cycle, many people leave or drop out after the first year. We therefore have to ensure a better system, a better framework to encourage our students. Libraries, collections, that's another point. I could give you a list of items. But if you tell me, is there a specific amount for teachers, for instance, or for libraries, my answer is no. Every institution has to establish its own plan. Some universities attach more importance to hiring of professors, while in other universities, you know, they need to stress, I would say, other aspects. Thank you. So why this change in positions? Well, it's simple. We realize that the transfers of fund between operation, mobilization, gave an impression of underfunding. However, when you really look at them, you notice that you have surpluses, and there's an increase, an important one, in many funds. And it's interesting to note that while you calculate this, it's quite a simple exercise, I guess you can get more save more money. For instance, last year we were analyzing the administration fund that was growing 10% every year, increasing every year, and we thought, what if we diminish this amount and try to follow the inflation, which is a very popular word, 3-4%? Well, that could be significant. So we had savings of about $100 million. So that's one of the reasons why we realized that we had problems with our calculations and the basic argument, which is evacuating those funds, mobilization fund and research fund. Monsieur Poupart had tried from Bishop. He had said that some of the elements were wrong, so we felt bad about it, and we tried to do our own research and investigation. When we talk about universities that have established their needs, let me remind you that last spring, we signed agreements, and in May, we asked the question as to know how many agreements were signed, and the answer was none. So the answer was also, we still have 2 years to sign those agreements. That was said by the Minister of Education, and in mid-May I discussed with the Dean of the University of Montreal. We asked him how many teachers, professors he needed to achieve his objective, and the answer was, you tell me how much money and I'll give you my answer. So, you know, if I go to my bank and I ask $15,000 and I tell them, well, I'll explain later what I will do with that money, well, that wouldn't work. However, this is the way it works in universities. When you talk about the ratio professor-student, this is included in the quality of teaching. So you have all types of profession, all types of employees in a university. So if you limit that aspect to a ratio, that doesn't work. For instance, the University of Quebec in Montreal hired about 100 new teachers, but when you consider the teaching. The teaching load that the professors have, well, you can, it's too much, because when you assess the quality of a professor, what you first consider is how many grants that professor has received, how many students in master's and PhD they are overseeing, and finally at the end, you know, only if assessed as 10% is the quality of teaching. Therefore, we are forcing the professor to go much more towards research, and what happened is that teachers, professors are now research managers, so, you know, we have to hire more professors, yes, but we have to consider their tasks, because, you know, you cannot force them really in practice to go and get more and more funding for research instead of funding for other important elements. So many professors will tell you that what they work much more on the management administration of the research than on the actual research. So we have to also establish a link with providing a better structure to students, specifically at the level of the master's and PhD. This is a basic, a key element to make sure that those students will finish their studies. But this is about more than just having more enough professors. It's also a matter of time. Will those professors have enough time to take care of their students, you know? So we have to re-examine those elements. It's not only a matter of money, it's also about the different tasks, the load, the workload. So it does not require an additional financing, but rather a reorganization of our functioning. And this goes, this is the same for budget items. It's a matter of reorganizing. Concerning the service for students, we also realized that many students, or many employees rather, would finish, would put an end to their career at the universities at, you know, in functions when they used to work at the student services. So there are many personal staff transfers. I will not name specific universities. So yes, there are transfers, staff transfers, and many member of personnel at the end of their career want to go to the student services because, however, those services are extremely expensive and they you know, even if they tell you, if you pay more, you'll get more services, really, we're just maintaining the services and we're paying, you know, we're increasing the retirement funds. So we, time flies. We need to keep time for a Q&A session. So I'll just provide an answer in a short answer, and we will. I'd like to know your opinion on the underfunding of universities. Concerning the different utilizations of those funds, it's a bit technical this morning, in my opinion. However, we should really understand basically what we need our universities that perform and that are able to provide the highest possible quality in research and teaching. Universities' mission is to train, to teach, to research, and to provide services to the community. And this is the basic needs. I mean, they need those resources to offer a better teaching, a better training, a competitive research and services to the community. If you want universities to provide and to answer, to satisfy the needs that are expressed by society, you have to provide the means. This is basic, and I believe that we all really want universities to develop, and this is what we should aim for as a society, and I believe that we should all work on this in order to get those funds. And the last element is, what was the last element of your question? Okay, should we add to this the funding of universities? Okay, in our 2010 document, we said clearly in writing that the means that are used to fund universities are a choice of society. This choice, the government has to make those decisions. You can't have fees that are as low as they are right now, that are the lowest, among the lowest in Canada. There's a basic principle here. If the government decides, whatever the government decides, it's choice. If it decides to freeze or increase the fees, the government will have to find different ways of compensating universities, because this is a choice that the government has to make. How will it finance the universities is its choice. However, the universities have to be fairly financed and funded. So, in our opinion, all those who benefit from a university teaching have to contribute to that funding. Thank you, Madame Desjardins, and I will now start the Q&A session. So please take the microphone, take the floor if you have a question, and we have about 10 minutes. 12 minutes maximum. I'll ask another question, and don't hesitate. Madame Desjardins, same question. Should we adjust the levels, the actual levels?
Well, Hugues Boisvert qui avait fait une recherche disant en fait qu'il y avait une spirale un peu inflationniste.
Indicate that there's a spiral, an inflation spiral. I said it. We can always put more money in the education system, the needs will always be there. However, we have to identify those needs. And I still need clarification on this. I still do not understand where the 600 million are distributed. How can you say that this money is missing if you know, that's difficult for me to understand. So here we have two levels for financing. One, you have a student, a full-time student. It's not just a student, but a full-time item. So you got a few students can be one full-time student. So this is a unique type of factor that you have to take into account. So I believe that this is one of the elements that we will have to examine in depth in the next few weeks to try and re-examine this this funding grid, really. So what are the objectives? This is my basic and main questions. You also have many elements of that funding grid you have full-time students, but we do have a very important competition. When I say this, I have strong reactions, but we have to admit it. There's a ferocious competition among universities because, you get for each student a direct grant. This has led to an increase in spending, for instance, in publicity or foreign recruitment. Students, international students, of course, bring money to universities, so we have increased the funding for international recruitment. That has a cost, of course, for the students, for university students, and that is something that we have to take into account. And if we have to change that grid in order to avoid this type of problem, that would be interesting. So we firmly believe that it takes, an independent organization, a group, a unit that can assess the whole network to make sure that we have checks and balances, because we don't want to increase competition only, but also we want to favor cooperation between the different institutions. For instance, you have the University of Sherbrooke that rents rooms and offices to the University of Quebec in Montreal. This is cooperation. A few years ago, some universities used to give themselves different grants or, donations. We're very far from this level of collaboration. Now we need to recreate a similar body. Yes, I have another question for you. So you have 1 minute. This competition issue, is it important? Yes, it is. But it's a positive competition that allows us to move to do better, to improve our ways. When we talk about competition, let me tell you that there was an increase of 30% of the student cohorts. Instead of this, our level of education scholarization in Quebec is less than that same rate for Canada, so we have to really promote university studies and increase the number of university students in Quebec. When we talk about publicity that would have the, you know, that this, that those budgets could help us for financing? No, this is 0.4%. Yes, we need publicity. Everybody does it. Museums, Radio Canada, universities do publicize their new programs, the registration dates, open doors, recruitment. All this is part of the publicity item, or international students, foreign students bring a lot of wealth intellectually for universities. Financially, for universities, it's not very interesting because the rights, the fees are returned to the Quebec government, except for six sectors, and this is very little if you compare it to the whole network. The funding regime, we will talk about it in the next few months. However, we are told that the problem is not the funding of the universities, but rather the formula or the regime, the funding regime, which means let's take the same pie but share it differently, and then, you know, as a miracle, you know, underfunding is gone. But no, impossible. You can improve this regime or this formula, but it's not enough to really address that underfunding problem. So those are two different things. Thank you. Je pense que my question is for Mr. Zizian and Madame Martine Desjardins. Can you agree on who can assess, not a comparative assessment, but an absolute one? Can you agree on who can assess the financial funding needs of universities? Madame Desjardins? Well, you know, we should discuss to see how to agree on this first, but to assess the different universities, we should ask the university, the academic community to study this question. We need... Also, the undergraduate students, we have to ask, you know, the whole of the community to really address this question and study it and examine it. And this has not been done yet. I haven't seen it in universities. Yes, the objectives on the long term have to be defined. Education is not something that you have to reassess every 4 years, but it's too fast. Evaluations and assessment have to be done over the next 10 or 15 years. In my opinion, it's the academic community as well as the people who are outside this community but who benefit from the services that the universities provide them, not only big business but also smaller businesses, the community people, other types of actors who beneficiate and have an interest in seeing the development of their universities. And I believe all our universities should examine those points. Yes, well, they do have strategic development plans, and they were...
what type of research, what type of education they want to offer, and these strategic plans determine the orientations of the budgets of university institutions. There are very concrete things as well. When we look at the amounts at the disposal of a university to train, just for example, it's easier to make my point, to train a doctor, the funds available in different universities compared to the amounts available in Ontario or British Columbia to train a doctor, and we see the difference of funding available to the universities, we wonder how we can assure an identical training regimen for our doctors. We do miracles in Quebec year after year. I compare the situation to an elastic. You can stretch it for a certain time without really noticing a difference, but if you're not careful, our university network will suffer. We have spent a lot in the last years on our network of universities to get to the level where we're at, and the situation cannot last. We have to make sure that the universities have the resources at their disposal that they need, and that is our message. And when we're looking at points of convergence, we should all have as an objective to improve the system and to make sure that resources are available to train and educate and do research and have other activities. One more question. Thank you, Mr. Zizan. And we have a very short break of 5 minutes after this question. Yes, hello. So I'm Maryse Louette. I am a art history doctorate candidate here at McGill, the third university I have attended. I did my bachelor's at Laval, master's at UQAM, and now I'm here. And I'm wondering, in terms of disparity, I'm wondering how we can answer the question of funding of universities when we look at it from a student perspective. I'm not really talking about the institutional policies here, but the major difference in what the students pay and the way they receive bursaries is managed differently from one university to another. I remember a doctorate candidate who's a friend of mine at Laval who received a bursary from the CRSH during her doctorate, and he noticed a certain point in his studies that a certain part of his funding disappeared, and I didn't know how much it was. It's not huge. It's a couple hundred dollars, but it did not get sent to him when he got his bursary because the university got a portion or kept a portion of it to fund administration of bursaries. So when I was at UQAM, they didn't take that money away from me. So I realize now for the first time since I started studying that I'm paying something that's a difference. There's a difference, an astronomical difference in what I'm paying at McGill compared to what I was paying at Laval and at UQAM with regards to also colleagues who are doing their doctorates in other universities. So I was curious to see when I was talking to a friend who's doing their doctorate in Laval to notice that I pay something like $2,167 for provincial education fees, and he pays something like $1,200 a year. And I looked at different websites on the sites of different universities and managing fees, and at Université Montréal, students pay the same amount until they get into research, and then fees vary when they're research and they take classes. In McGill, they call what we call a flat rate of 15 credits per semester when you're a doctorate student, even if you don't have any classes. Whereas at University of Montreal and Laval, if you don't have any classes, you pay fees that are quite different. So we say that the fees are the same in the whole province, and that for all students, and they pay the same thing. But in in fact, when we look at it from one university to another, there are enormous differences in the amounts the students are required to pay. We know that the higher levels, the postgraduate levels, those ones are taking classes, who are doing research, etc. Well, I noticed also that at McGill, when I'm in the research semester this year, I don't have any classes. I just have research, and they charged me as if I was taking 15 credits, which is not the case, whereas others right now in Laval pay $108 for their session because they are doing research, or $334 after the first two sessions. So there are changes, and I was wondering how you can explain or evaluate the needs at the province level when from one university or another university charges things, fees completely differently or in a very different way. I would like you to go first this time, and I want to say also that tomorrow we have the same round tables, but it'll be internally. We'll be able to ask some questions that way, but Mr. Suzanne, I'm going to speak generally because I don't have a fine-tuned knowledge of all the different institutions, but the fees per credit are determined by Quebec with budgetary rules that indicate what the amounts are that can be applied for students in the second and third cycles. There are different policies. Some of them make the amounts payable quickly. Some of them are more gradual. Some of them add fees for administration. So all this is part of the dispositions that are within the framework of the law for education fees in Quebec, and institutions that do not follow this will be penalized. So I'm saying this generally, but of course it would be worth examining this point in a more precise way. Well, I'm happy to see that we are not the only ones who noticed that in certain universities the practice of taking away some money from bursaries and grants exist. They're not indirect fees for research. They are grants and bursaries, and they will take away a certain amount for administration, which is kind of a problem, especially when we notice and we say that research funding should not be calculated. So for university fees, it's something we look at FERC because we have a superior education council, and we look at the different aspects of higher level education. We have the details of what is calculated and what is included and how the bill is calculated. I think you can come see me individually. I can explain to you why McGill University charges, because we do things differently here. Sometimes, in some cases, we have to look at that, but in some cases, universities add additional fees for university students for postgraduate study, so it could explain your disparity with the students of other universities. It's not just the way that they are established and the way they're set up, but what you're paying this semester is really related to the additional costs that you have to pay, even if you have no classes or no credits to stay. You have to pay fees and amounts. So please come see me. We're going to explain to you the different elements and the research we've done over the last 2 years on the different ways universities apply and different amounts that you're paying and what you're paying and why you're paying it and how it's applied. So the universities are charging you too much with regards to what they're supposed to be charging you. Maybe there isn't an agreement between your association and the Student Assistance Association and the administration to be able to charge you more, or they're illegally charging you more, or there's something wrong. Maybe there's penalties. We don't know. We have to look at it. Well, we'll continue the discussion on this. I think it's an excellent question, a question we haven't had time to explore yet, unfortunately. But that's all the time we had for this roundtable. Monsieur Daniel Zizian, Madame Martine Desjardins, I'd like to thank you for your presence here today on the underfunding of universities, myth or reality. I don't know if you have a better idea after this roundtable, but we will have an opportunity to continue the discussion, and the next one will be on partnerships between businesses and universities, and we'll take maybe 5 minutes for the transition, a little bit of a break. Thank you very much.